People Helping People, a program bridging the community with local organizations and nonprofits making a difference in the Bay Area. If you or someone you know would like to get your messages on People Helping People, please email us at contact@poly923fm.com or desipeoplehelpingpeople@gmail.com. Here are your hosts, Larry Walling and Greg Pirillo.
Hello and welcome to People Helping People on Bali 92.3 FM. My name is Greg, my co-host Larry. Are you going to pull the mic in front of you today or what? I was wondering, you look like you were ready to take a nap.
Well, you got your, why you have your headset on?
I don't know, it's because I was wearing them earlier and I
feel. See, I always do that and you always get on me.
Because you look weird and now I'm figuring.
Well, good morning.
Anyway,
it is a good morning.
It's good to have you.
Beautiful weather,
and
thank you.
Once again, we're joined by one of your bright spots, one of your shining moments in life.
Your
son Ryan, who's with us.
Hello.
By the way, Ryan, whenever you walk in the building, it takes a little bit of the edge off, I have to tell you.
Well, thanks, you know how much I
love your father, but geez, it's a lot to handle each week.
I have to keep him in line.
But it's all good stuff.
You balance him.
All good stuff.
Yeah.
I try to.
Today's going
to
be interesting because we are going to be joined by... We always have great guests. Let's face it. We've been lucky.
Yeah, we do.
We're in an area where there's some phenomenal people.
You have me every week.
That's true. But this week, we're going to invite Dr. Latha Palanyapan to this show. She is basically one of the leading doctors in the world. She's a professor, a clinician, and a researcher, and she's leading the study in strength training regimen for normal weight diabetics. So she's going to join us in a few minutes, and we're going to talk to her about not just diabetes, but also how diabetes is affecting the South Asian Indian audience and the East Asian Indian audience as well, and how and why that community is more affected, even if they're not overweight.
Yeah, and that really surprised me.
Was
the overweight part of it.
Yeah, because you think, like, I'm healthy. I think I eat right.
Do you think, this crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are not overweight. They just don't get checked for that. And because they don't get checked for that, there's a higher mortality rate in instance of diabetes.
Because you don't know you have it.
Yeah.
You just...
You're not
feeling well or something.
Yeah. I mean, because typically here, Westerners... if we're not overweight, we don't worry about having diabetes unless we're born with it.
True.
So
good point.
That occurred to me.
So we have a lot to talk about, and we'll cover quite a bit on the show. And this is a topic we've covered a few times, maybe a couple times, but it's been a while since we've gotten back to it. I think it's time.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Especially as it gets towards the holiday season, right? Diwali just passed, a lot of sweets, a lot of sugar.
Yep.
I know I eat a lot more around the holidays, Christmas time.
Yes, you do.
And, you know, look at Larry every January, puts on about 12 pounds. So because of that, we're less active in these months. We're eating more, spending more time with family. And, of course, if we eat, our stress, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a lot about this today. I'm very excited about it.
Me too.
And those people who are just joining us, People Helping People, every week is essentially an opportunity for us to give a voice to the community and discuss the things that are sometimes difficult to talk about, but we try to make it as listenable and accessible as possible without speaking over your head. We want to basically, I don't want to say dumb it down, but we want to make it as simple as possible to help people understand these things better.
Simplify it.
All right, Larry. So we've been... covering this topic, we've been talking about diabetes on People Helping People since we first started the show. Matter of fact, I think we had a guest on probably in the first month or two we did the show. And I think both of us were very shocked and surprised to find out not only some of the statistics, but also the people that are being affected by diabetes and how this isn't something that, you know, you could just say, it's never going to catch me, because the numbers might tell us otherwise. According to the International Diabetes Federation in 2015, there are 415 million people worldwide currently living with diabetes, and they're thinking by 2040, that number is expected to jump to 642 million. So you start looking at numbers like that, and you realize the odds of this happening to me or someone I love are fairly
high.
Right,
yeah,
which is scary. So today we're very excited to be talking to one of the leaders in the field, and we're lucky where we live, of course, because being right near Stanford, we have access to some of the best doctors in the world.
At the epicenter of what's happening.
So today we're going to talk to Dr. Latha Palanyappan of Stanford University. She's a professor, clinician, researcher. She's leading the study Strength Training Regimen for Normal Weight Diabetics, which is referred to as STRONG-D. So we're very excited to have you on the show today, Doctor. Thank you for being on People Helping People.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to talk about this topic. I have spent much of my life studying diabetes. I'm very interested in diabetes because it affects 1 out of 10 people in the U.S. and almost 1 out of 10 people worldwide. Diabetes is much more common in Asian populations.
Shocking so, about that, by the way. I was about, shocked to hear that.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying I was shocked to hear that.
Yes. So Asians are more likely to have diabetes, and they're more likely to develop diabetes at lower levels of body weight. So you can have someone with a normal, what we call BMI, body mass index, which for most people in the U.S. is defined as a body mass index of less than 25 is normal. Mm-hmm. For Asians, a body mass index less than 23 is normal. And you can figure out what your body mass index is by going to Google, putting in body mass index calculator. Google has one right up in there. You can put your height and weight and figure out what your body mass index is.
Huh.
And for most people, under 25 is normal. But for Asians, under 23 is normal because at lower levels of body weight, Asians are more likely to develop diabetes. So we have to have even more stringent cut points for Asians. And the prevalence of diabetes in Asians is up to 15% in some groups. So that's why diabetes is more prevalent and even prevalent when common risk factors like obesity aren't present.
So that's this, first of all, it's very interesting. And obviously, the South Asian Indian community is affected by this greatly. I never knew that was a more of a likelihood if you are of Asian descent, mm-hmm. that there would be a problem. But how do you avoid this? Like, what do you do to take steps to avoid it happening?
So one of the things you can do are, exercise. So that's what this study is looking at, to see what is the best exercise regimen, because we don't know if it's strength training, because we think that people at normal weight, it's not that they are too fat mm-hmm. and they have diabetes. It could be that they don't have enough muscle. So that relative lack of muscle is called sarcopenia. So sarco means muscle and penia means less.
Mm.
So we're doing a study to test if people with normal weight diabetes should do strength training, which increases muscle, aerobic training, which decreases fat and decreases muscle, or a combination of both of those things. So we know that for overweight and obese people with diabetes, it is very important to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
But for people with normal weight, it doesn't make sense for them to lose weight, right? Because
right.
there's lots of studies that show that if people are too low in their weight, they also have increased death.
Because you're looking at somebody and you see their, usually you can say like, well, if you're overweight, chances are you have a higher risk. And that's what I've always thought. If you're not eating right, you have too much fat and sugar in your diet, then
their diet would have
the leading cause to get you to lead into type 2 diabetes. You're saying to look at these people, they're not necessarily showing signs that they would be prone to diabetes type 2, but instead, if they focus on gaining muscle mass instead of losing weight, then that should help.
Well, so that's what we're studying, because we don't know yet what is the best exercise to recommend for normal weight diabetics. So we're randomizing people. We're saying, okay, we're going to flip a three-sided coin. One-third of you are going to do strength training. One-third mm-hmm. is going to do aerobic, and one-third is going to do both. And we're planning to randomize 300 people in the study, so 100 in each of those different kinds of exercise. And at the end of the study, which hopefully will be 2 or 3 years, we'll have an idea of what is the best thing for doctors to tell their patients when they have normal weight diabetes.
I would say two things. I was thinking more cardio
mm-hmm.
rather than weight or lightweight training. And what age group are more prone for this, for diabetes, the one that you're studying?
I'm sorry. So older people are more prone to normal weight diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So as we get older, we naturally lose muscle mass. So there's It's called sarcopenia of aging. And our pancreas puts out 7% less insulin each year. So it gets harder and harder to maintain a normal glucose. So older people are more likely to have normal weight diabetes, and Asians are more likely to have normal weight diabetes. So so of the 10% of diabetics in the U.S., about 20% of those, 10 to 20% of those are normal weight diabetics. Most people with diabetes are overweight or obese, so about 80% are overweight or obese, but there's a small fraction that has normal weight diabetes. But the problem is that small fraction is overrepresented with Asians and older adults. And there are studies that show that people with normal weight diabetes have more deaths. So they're more likely to die than overweight or obese diabetics. So we think that for some reason, their pathophysiology, they might be more insulin resistant, that is causing more cardiovascular risk and other risks that cause earlier deaths in normal weight diabetics particularly. So this is this subset of this normal weight diabetics are really high risk. They die more.
Huh. Wow. So I was just looking at a statistic that blew my mind. It said here, India and the United States carry the two of the largest shares of the diabetes burden. I saw India 69 million currently. They're projecting 123 million. The United States 29 million currently, with 35 million projected. So China is the only country that actually is higher, and that's 110 million. I'm sure it's all relevant too because of the amount of people there, the
population.
But you see these things, and it jars you a bit. And I think the average person listening is, you know, you get nervous and you think, what can I do? But you don't want to let these things affect you. What is the best way to get in front of something like this? I mean, as a regular person who's not battling this condition and not battling this disease, what do we do? Is it start with just exercise? Is it start with eating less sugar? Are there easy things that we can benchmark and say, this is going to help me?
That's a great question. So I think the key to getting in front of this is prevention. And we talked a lot about exercise already. In general, I recommend an hour of exercise daily for my patients. Wow. I know we've heard, 30 minutes most days of the week, but I really think, especially as we get older, that we should have exercise for an hour a day. It should be a mix of aerobic, strength training, balance, flexibility, and stretching, and core strengthening. So those are the five elements of exercise. Wow. And for diet, I kind of think of it as macro tuning. So macro tuning is making sure you have the right number of calories. So when you calculate your BMI, you can calculate how many calories you should have. So I'm a very short person, and my ideal body weight for a BMI of less than 23, because I have those more stringent guidelines, is 120 pounds. So a rough rule of thumb is you should eat 10 calories for every pound that you should weigh. So for me, that's 1,200 calories a day, which is a lot less than what it says on the nutritional guidelines.
Yeah, correct.
So I think people should be aware of what their ideal body weight is and use this rough rule of thumb. So 10 calories a day is the resting metabolic rate. And even if you exercise an hour a day, keeping your calories to that amount is very recommended.
Wow.
And then, so it's a lot less than you think.
Oh, my God. I was like 10 pounds, like starting to do the math in my head.
Well,
like,
you're probably up there in the
easy.
2,500.
No, this is what's...
And then whatever you currently weigh times 10 is how many calories you're currently eating. So, if I were, for instance, to weigh 150 pounds, that means I'm eating 1,500 calories a day. And if I need to weigh 120 pounds, I would decrease to 1,200 calories a day. And that's a 300-calorie deficit per day.
You are blowing my mind right
that's
now.
That's like nothing.
Blowing my mind, because I never knew that I had to add 10 calories per pound. I never thought of that, and that's brilliant. It really
is. It's a really easy calculation.
Yeah, and it's also, here's the thing. I was reading through these different statistics and reports that were sent over in preparation for the interview, and I really agree with this because it says a large part of what makes a clinical study successful is where it's taking place, its location. Mm-hmm. Because there's such a higher concentration of South Asian Indian communities here, I would imagine your research Being that you're in Palo Alto or you're in Stanford, so your research is in, you're in the perfect spot to do it. How does that play a factor in all this? How are you able to tap into that community and learn more and take more for your research?
Well, you know, I think that the research is inspired by the community. You know, it's just the frustration with seeing these patients in clinic, the normal weight diabetics, and not knowing what to do for them. You know, it's very frustrating as a clinician not to have the evidence and the science to support making people better.
Right.
So this study is basically to create that evidence for a population that is very overrepresented here. The Bay Area, you know, we have some counties that are almost 30% Asian. Santa Clara is 30% Asian. And then Asian Indians there are about 7%. So one out of every 15 people in Santa Clara are Asian Indian. So, you know, we really see a lot of these patients. A lot of them have this disease, and I, you know, want to have an answer for them.
That's a scary thought when you think about it. I went to a church, and my pastor at that time is from India, Samuel Nanda Kumar, and he's had diabetes, my gosh, and well, he's got to be probably in his upper 60s. He's probably had diabetes for about 15 years. And I always looked at him and I thought, well, gosh, Nanda, you're not overweight at all. And I couldn't relate because he wasn't overweight, not at all. He was very slender. So, and I was always used to seeing people that were, you know, at least overweight and a lot of them obese that had problems with diabetes.
Later in life,
yeah. So with these people, the Indians that you're doing your research on, Asian Indians, what is the, I know we don't have a cure for it, but what is the, like, fatality rate compared to, you know, Americans or overweight people, if you have?
So the mortality rate is about 20% higher.
Wow.
And what we say is that, you know, when people have diabetes, it's a coronary disease equivalent. So the risk of someone with diabetes having a heart attack is the same risk as someone who's already had a heart attack having a heart attack.
Oh, that's huge.
And we say that that's, you know, 50% in 5 years have another heart attack. So it's very high, and the risk is, you know, much higher with normal weight diabetes.
Wow. Yes.
So it's definitely something that we want to prevent and be able to treat effectively. And then, so I was going to go also to the fine-tuning of the diet. So once you have your calories sort of in place, you know, it's important to, as you said, decrease the refined carbohydrates, so all of the white carbohydrates, so white bread, white pasta. So I recommend that my patients have 4 grams of fiber per serving of carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have the fiber around the carbohydrate, it decreases the absorption of the glucose, so you don't have those peaks and valleys in your glucose, and it's sort of more of a very mellow, smooth curve for your glucose, so it doesn't go up and down. The grain, so instead of white rice, so I ask my patients to think of white rice as sugar. So it's basically like eating a bowl of sugar, because as soon as you eat that white rice, it turns immediately into glucose, and the glucose levels in your blood are going up as if you're eating sugar. So instead of eating white rice, if you can eat brown rice with 4 grams of fiber per serving of rice, that brown rice has a fiber around it.
Oh.
So then it slows the absorption of the glucose, the fiber around it, and the fiber has all the micronutrients in it, which are very helpful for prevention of other diseases and maintaining your immune system.
So it seems to me, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No,
well, I was thinking processed foods.
Yes.
Mostly all our maladies, problems come from processed foods. And Americans are, you know, we're just addicted to processed foods. So if we eliminated a lot of the processed foods, and, you know, because along with that come preservatives, wouldn't that be like a natural way to do it and put them on that kind of a diet, natural rather than processed
foods? Absolutely. More whole foods.
Right.
And less eating things out of packages and cans and jars is a really great idea. And then I'll just mention for the Indian community, often atta, A-T-T-A, is a wheat flour that's used. Mm-hmm. But the atta that's commonly available in the grocery stores here are very refined. So even if they look brown, they're not really whole grain.
Sure.
So I really want people to look at the food labels. And now, because India has this high rate of diabetes, whole grain atta is also available. So look for attas with 4 grams or more of carbohydrate. And, you know, I've had patients that mix different things in with the atta to make their chapati or roti. So almond meal is a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have used other kinds of flours. And you know, we wrote this paper on incorporating ancient grains into the Indian diet. So in the 1900s, all of the Indian diet was whole grain, so finger millet, rye, jowra, and all of the rice was unrefined. But it was only in the 1950s with the Green Revolution and just trying to create calories for the population of India that refined grains became more prevalent. But if we can go back to the diet of India in the 1900s, that would be the best diet for prevention of diabetes in Indian population.
It's interesting too, because of, like, I know I've read a lot about the, like, the paleo style diets,
right,
which is like really eliminates,
it's whole foods.
Yeah,
basically
you're eliminating, like, for, you know, cold cuts, for example.
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah. Right, and I feel like cold cuts are an enemy for me because I love them, but you realize the fact that it's completely breaking down and like you said, it's processed,
it's
foods.
Processed, yeah.
I always thought, When I thought of diabetes, I always thought of, like, you know, stay away from sugar, stay away from Twinkies and chocolate. But when you realize that pasta, rice, things that you grew up thinking were just normal whole foods, how much of a problem that they can cause for us.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question here, doctor? What can be done? Let's say I have type 2 diabetes and I'm starting to live with my new reality. First of all, can it be cured? Can it be reversed? And secondly, what can be done to improve lifestyle? I mean, it's a new frontier for some people when they first come up and they find out they have the disease. Can anything be done? Can they be healed? Where do they go?
Yes, you can absolutely be cured of diabetes. It is a curable disease. So there was a study called the Diabetes Prevention Project in which they took 3,000 people, 1,000 of them did diet and lifestyle, 1,000 took a drug for diabetes called metformin, and 1,000 of them did nothing. And this was the first trial to show that diet and lifestyle was better than a drug in preventing diabetes.
Makes sense.
So, and it was only a very modest weight loss, so it was 7% weight loss. So for a 200-pound person, that's like losing 15 pounds.
Hmm. Wow.
So it's not that much. And you don't have to get to normal weight, but that in and of itself can prevent and treat diabetes. So being at a normal weight for 80% of the people who have diabetes that are overweight and obese, if they can get down to a normal weight, they won't have diabetes anymore.
Wow. So there's hope. I mean, this is what we always look for, right? I mean, yeah. I know type 1 diabetes, you're born with this, right? So there's really no known cure for that, correct?
No, for type 1 diabetes, it's something that can happen at any time in life. So what we think happens is that there might be a viral infection or something that starts attacking the beta cells of the pancreas, which produce insulin. And that can happen when a child is 6 months or 2 years or 5 years or 14 years, any really time in life. And that type 1 diabetes is only 5% of all diabetes in the world. 95% of all diabetes is the type 2 diabetes that we get later on in life. And the way to distinguish between the two is with type 1 diabetes, as you said, you can't be cured. You need to take insulin for the rest of your life.
Right.
You have to take shots or you have to have an insulin pump. Type 2 diabetes comes when our body is exposed to too much glucose over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then our pancreas is putting out insulin and really trying hard, you know, because the insulin is what puts the glucose into the cells and makes sure that we can use the glucose and that the glucose levels in our blood aren't too high. And then over time, the pancreas is not able to keep up with all the glucose that's in our blood. So then the glucose levels get gradually higher and higher. So that's when you go to the doctor, they check your glucose and they say, oh, you're pre-diabetic or you're diabetic. So, and that happens over time. And then we can give you medicines to help your pancreas work a little bit better. It just drives those beta cells a little bit better. But then eventually, maybe later on, the pancreas gets, we call it exhausted. The pancreatic exhaustion is what we call it. And then that's when people with type 2 diabetes have to take insulin. But type 1, people with type 1 diabetes have to take insulin from the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is, I guess, because not everybody is as informed when it comes to, well, really anything. Until you're forced to deal with it, sometimes you kind of blissfully ignore these things, correct? You know, it's
right.
Unless you're faced with the challenge yourself, and then you want to learn everything about it. But I know there's some, I don't want to say ignorance, there's some, I guess, a lack of education when it comes to the difference between type 1 and type 2. My brother-in-law was born with it, and he's had, you know, sort of issues throughout his life because of it. And he's learned, you know, there's been advances, like he has the pump that is permanent on his side. And I'm sure it's got a medical name for it, but it's he has a shunt or something in his side. Do you know what I'm talking about, doctor?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So we call those insulin pumps. You have the exact right terminology.
Okay. I was just making sure I wasn't sounding like a fool. But he said that has been a huge, huge leap forward for him. He said, you know, having to do the shots three times a day or whatever it was his whole life, and now it has taken a little bit of the burden of the disease off him. And anything that can be done to take some of the burden off is always good. But the advances that we're making in the whole field of diabetes, which obviously it's your life's work at this point, how far have we come? How close are we to really making progress to the point where maybe this won't be an issue in 100 years?
I think we've made huge leaps forward in type 1 diabetes, like the type your brother has, in terms of creating an artificial pancreas, you know. So we are putting in glucose sensors. So your brother probably has what's called a continuous glucose monitor. So he just puts a little catheter under his abdomen, and it's continuously monitoring his glucose instead of having to poke his finger six times a day, probably like he used to when he was a kid.
Yep.
And then taking that glucose data and feeding it into the insulin pump. So it's doing what the pancreas is supposed to do. And we're, you know, the pancreas is real time, right? Like, it knows that there's something in your stomach, and it puts out insulin before it gets to your intestines and before things get absorbed. But I the artificial pancreas at this point, I heard it described as driving 200 miles an hour down a road and only turning the wheel after you see the curve.
Hmm.
Our current pancreas is able to, you know, see the curve in the road before it comes.
Oh.
But we're doing it after the fact with the artificial pancreas. We're checking the glucose and then after the fact giving the insulin. And we've made enormous strides in type 1 diabetes already. I mean, in 1920, kids were dying that had type 1 diabetes because we didn't have artificial insulin. And then we figured out how to make and refine insulin from pigs, actually, initially. And then that's what we were, you know, injecting. And now, you know, we are synthetically able to produce insulin. And so, you know, we've gotten even better with type 1 diabetes. As far as type 2 diabetes, the interesting thing about that is that this is a problem that we created.
Interesting. So it created by...
Because of obesity and our changing food.
Yeah, diet.
Yeah, processed foods, right? Yeah. Basically.
I would think so.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And also decreased activity. So, like, if you look in 1920, you know, we didn't have that much type 2 diabetes.
Because we would go outside and play, right? We weren't on our computers all day.
Well, you were from the 20s, I was before my time.
So let me just reset. If you're tuning into the show and you're listening, you're wondering what the heck's going on and how this person knows so much. You've been listening to Dr. Latha Palanyappan of Stanford University. I'm telling you, what we've learned in a half hour is so vital. And I would love it if in the future you could come back and join us again to continually educate our listeners as we see we're affecting the Desi community here. We need to be ahead of this. Would you be kind enough to join us again in the future and continue this and hopefully inform our listeners?
Absolutely. And I would love to, if I might be able to share the information about the study, where people can call if they're interested or
please.
Email.
Yes.
So the phone number, if you're interested in this exercise study for type 2 diabetes, is 650-736-2743. That number again is 650-736-2743. Or please email us at strongdstudy@stanford.edu. That's strongdstudy@stanford.edu. And we would love to help you treat your diabetes.
So I just want to thank you very much for being on the show. I mean, it shows all about people like you. And we deal a lot, as we said in the past, with nonprofits and people helping people. So you're a big part of that. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you both so much. And I look forward to speaking with you again.
Doctor, thank you so much for being
with
us. We can't wait to have you back again.